Welcome to another episode of First Off, Let's Kill All the Lawyers. That phrase written by Shakespeare back in the 15th century that drew raucous applause and laughter when it was uttered, and even today still does, as people contemplate, that's not a bad idea to kill all the lawyers. I'm David Heffernan. I've been practicing law here in South Florida for about 3 decades. And the goal behind these broadcasts is quite simple. Bring in local lawyers in varying aspects of law, get to know a little bit about them, why they got into law, what they did, and maybe, just maybe, by the end of the show, we can take one off the list to save that lawyer. This morning, I have the pleasure of having not only a really good lawyer, but a good friend and possibly one of the nicest human beings I've ever known. Jeff Rubin joins me, and Jeff, you've been doing this a long time, local guy. We got a lot to talk about, but let's just start off with, how did you wind up becoming a lawyer?
Well, it's probably a family thing.
Okay.
The name of the law firm is Tyanoff, Rubin & Rubin. And Tyanoff is my maternal grandfather. And my maternal grandfather and my father actually practiced law together back in the 60s and 70s.
Okay.
So that was the aspect, you know, having the family aspect of it. And then, you know, so it was sort of predestined that I would become a lawyer. Enjoyed law school. I went to University of Miami. Loved it back in the 80s, and graduated in 89. And then soon after that, my grandfather was thinking about retiring. So it was an opportunity to join the firm. And then eventually the firm name became Tyanoff, Rubin & Rubin. So it's a family tradition. So for about 3 years, we actually had 3 generations walking in the office.
Very, very cool. Very cool. So let's talk about what they founded then. What type of law were they doing when they first started?
Great. So my grandfather was really in the collection business. He did a lot of retail and commercial collection, was very involved in local community organizations and collection agencies throughout the country. And he started something called, he was involved with the Commercial Law League of America. And that was the aspects of his types of law he did, like some probate and some wills and things like that. And then my father was a workers' compensation lawyer. So needless to say, I learned a lot from them. And became a collection lawyer and also a workers' compensation lawyer, as well as I do a general practice.
All right. And we're going to delve into that sort of pressure that's the family lineage. Was there ever a thought of doing something else?
Gosh, I guess if I look back, I would have probably been like a sailing coach or doing another passion or something like that. But, when we went to law school or we went to undergraduate school, David, you know, it was you go to undergraduate school and then you go right into a profession. But that is, or you're going to get your master's, or you get a professional degree. And that really is not the way it works, I think, today.
Right.
Yeah, I'm finding, at least with my son, at least, you know, he went, got an undergraduate degree, worked for a while, and then realized what he needed to get a master's in. And so that's a different thing that occurred or is occurring now. So I think for me, it was just something that I thought it was a good thing to do. I didn't want to go, you know, was interested in the other professions. There was really no business aspects in my family of things that I got turned on to. So it was sort of a natural fit.
Well, and you're right. I do see that now. My daughter, for example, been out in the workforce for a while, graduated from Florida State, is now going back to get her master's.
Yeah.
And I think it actually makes more sense unless you really know what you want to do. I think having some real world experience and then going back and go, okay, how will this benefit me? Because I think a lot of times you got to analyze now, okay, does this further education? And I'm very pro education, but sometimes I think, you know, people would go from undergrad to some sort of graduate program.
Just
to continue to become a student. Yeah,
that's right.
Not necessarily. Okay, this MBA may not help me in what I'm ultimately going to do.
My son and I had the same conversation. He goes, Dad, you know, because he's now getting his master's. He's now worked for 4 years. He's now getting his master's in securities and technology and securities up at Georgetown. And he would have never gone into that program without the 4 years of experience that he has working. And, it made a lot of sense, and it makes a lot of sense now of something that maybe you and I should have done, and maybe you wouldn't have been a lawyer.
Well, I had a gap in there. I got drafted in the NFL.
Yep.
I bounced around and played Hard Knocks before they actually videoed it. You know, I got a lot of, hey, coach wants to see you bring your playbook multiple times as I bounced around. And actually my undergraduate degree was in communications. And so I came back and I was going to work in television and radio and all that until the reality sort of set in that to stay in a TV market, it's rare that you stay in one market. You have to go to small market, make a name, move to this market, make a name, move to bigger market. And I'd spent the last 4.5 years packing my cart, moving from NFL city to NFL city. And I said, I don't want to do it. And so I wasn't sure what I was going to do when I went to law school. And then, much like you, I actually enjoyed law school. And having been out of school for a while and now really applying myself, found it fascinating, and then got into litigation. And there's so many parallels,
right?
You know, between athletics and is history.
That's right.
So, well, let's talk about workers' compensation, because it's such a thing that happens so much, but I don't think people really understand it. And so, you know, it's a legislative scheme that's sort of a trade-off to say, all right, you can't sue your employer for negligence unless literally they damn near murder you.
That's
okay.
Right. That's right.
Because it's a hard exception to get by. But so talk about what workers' comp means when somebody gets hurt. What are they entitled to, and how does that work?
Well, I tell clients it comes down to two different parts, and you break it up into two aspects. You're right. If you are hurt while working, and even if your employer or a co-employee was negligent causing your injury, you cannot sue your employer.
Right.
That's the exception, and that's for your ability to receive workers' compensation benefits. So it's a no-fault law. So even if you're a chef and you cut off your own finger while cutting some potatoes, you're going to receive workers' compensation benefits. So it's two aspects. You have the medical aspect. You have the right to receive medical care while you're treating and recovering and trying to get better. And as long as the doctor is treating you and you have not reached what we call maximum medical improvement, you're getting better.
Right.
You would get that treatment, but you'd also have a right to receive workers' compensation benefits. Workers' compensation benefits would pay you roughly 2/3, or let's say 60% of your average weekly earnings while you're recovering, while you're getting better, so that you have a chance to get better, get treatment, and at the same time receive payments, at least some income coming in, so because you're not able to work during that time period.
All right, and how long can that go on?
Great question. In a perfect world, I would not have a job in workers' compensation, because right. The insurance company would be doing everything right.
Wait, you're telling me insurance companies sometimes don't do the right thing?
There's
a shocking revelation here today that sometimes the insurance companies don't do the right thing.
That's the reason why you called me on the show, because you wanted me to teach you something.
I did, because frankly, in all my personal injury cases, the insurance companies are always fair and they just do the right thing. It's not like we ever have to file suit and take them to the courthouse or anything like that.
No, not at all. So, they're obviously very, adjusters are very overwhelmed and things get missed where they take certain positions. And so in that case, I have a job because my responsibility is to make sure that those medical benefits come in, make sure that they're paying them the right amount of money, and that they're receiving all of the other benefits under the workers' compensation law, mileage, transportation, medication, a wheelchair, whatever they may need, anything from any medical aspect that they would need. And then, of course, those benefits last, in most cases, until the employee reaches maximum medical improvement. That's a medical legal term when there's no reasonable chance that you're going to get any better. You sort of plateau on your care.
Right.
And at that point, the medical benefits would continue on a PRN or an as needed basis, but the workers' comp benefits for that, not so catastrophic injury would stop. Now, if you have a catastrophic injury, then benefits perhaps could continue beyond that if you prove what the employee is what they call permanently and totally disabled. And then
that's what I was going to ask. So you get to MMI, maximum medical improvement.
Yep.
But what if you can't go back to do what you were doing? In other words, MMI, as you just pointed out, doesn't mean you're back to where you were. It just means you're kind of as good as you're going to get based on that injury. And oftentimes that leaves people in a lesser position with lesser ability. And so what do they do then?
Well, there's a tough line you have to draw. And when somebody is permanently totally disabled, they have to be pretty catastrophic, because that's, basically I can't work for the rest of my life. And insurance companies employees actually have a very strict standard they would have to prove. You'd have to prove that you have the inability to get a job within a 50-mile radius of where you live. And you have to have unsuccessful job search for a very significant amount of time. And you have to really be able to show to the judge that you would not be able to work during that entire, there's no chance that you're going to be able to get a job under that strict standard. But then you have those employees that, you know, hurt their back, a construction worker. And now they're never the same person because of that bad back, but they have the ability to do other things. So it very, very difficult cases in those situations to prove that you're permanently totally disabled. And unfortunately, you know, you reach maximum medical improvement, your benefits really would stop and you have a tough road to hoe after that. And benefits may not continue.
Well, is there any aspect? Okay. So in the personal injury world,
yep.
You know, one of the things that we can recover on behalf of people that get hurt is obviously loss of earnings. That's easy. You know, I was hurt during this time frame. I couldn't work for 3 months, 6 months, whatever. We also can recover loss of earning capacity, meaning, okay, I can go to work and back to work, but not in the same capacity. Now I'm only earning 70% of what I used to earn. So if you've got somebody like a construction worker that gets hurt and that's all he knows, but he could go work somewhere else but make less money, is there any compensation for that?
No. And that's a real big difference between workers' compensation benefits and personal injury benefits. Because in workers' compensation, it's a system of lost wages. So there is no pain. There's no suffering. There's no payment for the fact that you can't be the same person or do the same things that you used to do. The only thing that they actually pay is once you reach maximum medical improvement, MMI, they have something called impairment benefits. Impairment benefits is the workers' compensation way of paying the employee for their loss or their loss in the future. So for instance, if you, at the end of, when you reach maximum medical improvement, that's determined by a doctor, the doctor gives you a percentage of impairment.
Right.
So if you have a percentage of impairment, let's say a 5%, then what they would pay you is they would pay you, they multiply that by two. So five times two would be 10 weeks of impairment benefits. And impairment benefits, believe it or not, it's a little complicated, are 75% of your compensation rate. So it's basically 75% of two-thirds your average weekly wage.
So not 75% of what you were earning, it's 75% of that 60%.
Correct. Okay. Time for 10 weeks.
Right.
And that is that the workers' compensation way of paying you for your impairment loss, which is far different in your business, David, where personal injury, where you have the ability to recover so many other damages, unlike workers' compensation.
But that, and that's what I always explain to people, because we'll get calls and people are significantly hurt, but it's a job site or something like that. While we're always looking for potential third parties that we can hold responsible, but I explain it to people and say, well, look, it's sort of a trade-off, because in the world of personal injury, we have to prove fault. We have to prove negligence. And whether somebody did something wrong, workers' comp, you just have to prove you got hurt while you were working, right?
That's correct. That's all you have to do. Like I said, it's a no-fault law and far different. So there's a trade-off. You know, the question is whether or not if you get hurt, you might as well get hurt while working. But then again, if your injury is catastrophic and it's life-lasting, you're not going to get those benefits and you're not going to get the damages that you would get in a case like personal injury.
All right. Let's talk, because I know we've faced issues with that. And my partner does some workers' comp as well. We hear, and I don't want to paint with too broad a brush, but, you know, of workers' comp doctors. Okay. In other words, insurance companies, and it happens in personal injury too, but insurance companies like these doctors. So what can you do, or what can somebody who's hurt do if they don't think they're getting the right care and treatment from this doctor? Can you switch?
Great question. The answer is yes, you can switch, but you only get one bite of the apple.
Okay.
So for instance, if you are treating with a workers' compensation doctor, because you have to stay within that family. So if you get hurt, the first thing that you normally do is we'll send you to a clinic. Then the clinic doctor will try to see you and try to get you back to work. And then maybe make a recommendation if you have a bad back to an orthopedist or a neurosurgeon or something like that. And then that doctor, once again, selected by the insurance company, will treat you. And then let's say you're just not pleased with that particular doctor, but you may have a foot injury, you have a knee injury, you have a back injury. You have one chance for one specialty to request a one-time change of physician.
Okay.
That's it. So all you have to do is you send a letter to the insurance company and they have 5 days to give you a one-time change. If they don't give it to you within that 5 days, then you can select your own. They normally do. But then if you say I have a bad back, bad knee, back, bad foot from that injury, you have to sort of select which part of your body.
Right. You don't get to go to somebody that specializes in feet. I mean, you might, but then you're not going to get your back treatment.
That's right. So that's the only time. And once again, that doctor is within your family.
Okay.
Within the family of workers' compensation.
Right. And if they do it within the 5 days, again, you're just going to another doctor they've selected.
That's correct. Okay. That's correct. Yeah. So you know, so yes, you know, there are workers' compensation doctors per se, you know, you hope that they take the oath, they take their Hippocratic oath, they 100%. Hope they're doing that stuff. But at the same time, that's how they get their business.
Right.
If it's a workers' compensation doctor. And you can certainly tell the difference when you walk into a workers' compensation office or doctor that sees workers' comp patients versus maybe that has other types of patients, because it's a mill house.
Right.
Because they don't pay. They pay a workers' comp right. schedule.
So they do it in volume.
They do it in volume.
That's they do it in volume. And let's face facts. The insurance companies want people that are going to get people back to work as quickly as possible.
And they should.
Right.
But in and out. Absolutely. And I think also when somebody comes in, there's always that thought process from a doctor. They look at that patient a little bit differently. Are they malingering? Are they doing something that maybe they wouldn't do if they had hurt themselves playing basketball or getting out of the car
right.
or something like that, or trip and fall in a supermarket or something like that?
Well, I think that's, as with any sort of benefit, and it clearly is a benefit not to have to, you know, prove fault for your employer and litigate with your employer, which then changes the entire dynamic. But with any benefit that people get, there's always people that are going to try to take advantage of it. And it's a system that's well-intentioned, but certainly has flaws.
Yeah. And that's just human nature. That's a part of a human nature to sort of just do things that you think is going to benefit you. But in the end, I don't think it really does, because your true self always sort of comes out. I tell my clients, if I had to prepare a client for a deposition and I only had 2 minutes, the only thing I'd say is I'd pretend like your mother is asking you the questions. Okay. And your mother knows the answers to every questions they're going right. to ask. And in that situation, then you have to tell the truth, because your mother will know when you're lying. And veracity and trustworthiness is the most important thing for both in your business.
Oh, 100%. I mean, completely. I've never used the mother line, but I might incorporate that now.
Yeah.
But again, I've always, you know, look, truth is the key to all of it, because even things totally unrelated to completely. What the case is, all of a sudden you lie about something thinking it has nothing to do with anything. And now collaterally, you're going to get impeached.
Correct.
And your credibility gets drawn into question. And once anybody that's seeking money, particularly ultimately going to stand in front of a jury, if the issue of credibility starts to go,
yep,
it's done.
I completely agree. Completely so, agree. That's right. The way I've tried to teach my clients that way. And I think that it's really paid off over the 30 something years I've been practicing law.
All right. One of the other things I've heard in workers' comp are washouts. What explain what that is, where there's some sort of payday and they stop your benefits.
So most cases end up getting resolved, but unlike in your case, well, you know, if your case goes all the way to the end in a personal injury, a jury would decide the amount of money that this person would receive.
Right.
In workers' compensation, a judge does not determine value of a case. A judge only determines benefits that may be owed. But there are, in most circumstances, a case would be resolved or washed out. And what would happen is the insurance company, you reach MI, you're sort of close to the end of the treatment. You know that your days are sort of done with receiving benefits. So what you can do is you can negotiate, that would be my job, with right. the insurance company for a settlement. And the insurance company would pay you a lump sum of money to cover you both your medical care and maybe your future lost wages. And that would be paid for by the workers' compensation insurance company, an amount of money. And then you're able to take your cut or you're cut from the as lawyer's fees and costs and things like that. And it gives the employee a chance to be able to get back to work. They get some money to get sort of up and running. But once again, it only is around those two benefits that you look
right.
at, medical and indemnity. It does not include those other damages in it like you have in a personal injury case.
All right. Interesting. Let's shift gears a little bit, because in addition to being a fine workers' comp lawyer, you and I, and you were instrumental in me getting on the Orange Bowl committee, you're on the Orange Bowl committee, and more importantly, you served as president of the Orange Bowl committee during the pandemic.
Yep.
And I got to just say kudos, because we got a game off. We actually got a national championship game, even though that's not directly sort of ours. That's, you know, the strong backing behind it, pulled both games off. And just a tremendous job to you. So just talk a little bit about, I mean, I don't want to get off on the Orange Bowl committee too much, but it, to me, one of the things I think we need to work on, and I'm actually going to get Jack to come on the show, to talk about what the Orange Bowl committee does for the community. But talk about your role as president, and then your role as president during a pandemic.
well, thank you. I mean, obviously, when I became president, I never imagined that it would be during a year of a pandemic. But I remember sitting in February of 2019. No, 2020, right? Pandemic, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, started March of 20. That year, forget about the year. It's gone. We're almost into 2022. We're 121 days away
from that.
2022.
That's crazy.
And everybody forgot like 2021, and they go back to the pandemic in 2020. Yeah, yeah.
So we're sitting
it's Groundhog there. Day without any of the humor.
in February of 20. And I said, I just don't want any trauma. I just want everything. No drama, no nothing. So our CEO, Eric Palms, says, well, I think you got a pandemic in front of him. Like, well, what are you talking about? And then we were off and running. So everything that the Orange Bowl had done throughout the year, the game gives us the ability to do everything we do out for the year for the community. So what we used to have is an events and programs and everything for the community, basketball tournaments and high school showcases and
youth football and cheerleading and
everything. I mean, David, I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And then all of a sudden we're now, you know, shifting gears, repurposing, reimagining, and we're now, you know, helping feed South Florida. And so thanks to our sponsors who went along with this ride with us, we're able to do so many different things last year that we never imagined that we would ever do. So, you know, although our organization's been around for 88 years, we're all about serving the community. We're about bringing tourism to Miami, bringing, you know, helping the economy of Miami. And we think that we do that while also having a chance to serve our community. But, you know, you talked about being present during a pandemic, but you're all around the people that you're surrounded by. And fortunately, David, you were our secretary at that time. You still are the secretary of the Orange Bowl Committee. And, you know, it was your wisdom because you're a yes, no kind of guy. And I so much appreciated having somebody like you on the executive board, because we would come to you, you would analyze, and you give a yes or a no. It wasn't wishy-washy. And it made that year and surrounding myself around people like you so much easier and so much more palatable.
Well, I again, kudos to you, because I truly think the leadership you showed during this pandemic, because look, everything was brand new.
Yes.
You know, we do the Orange Bowl all those other years. And yes, there's always variations. We're trying to evolve. We're trying to get into different programming. How can we help? What do we do at schools and all that? But there's a blueprint there.
Yep.
I mean, you know, here's the book. Oh, absolutely. And, you know, you could add a chapter or a page in here, maybe take this page out. Well, you got a blank book and went here.
Exactly. You know? Oh, we were redoing budgets. I mean, I can never imagine that in February of last year, I'm thinking that we're going to do a budget for no fans, 20% of the stand fans of the stadium, 50% of the fans of the stadium, or no game. That's never been done before. So we were prepared. We were ready.
Thank God our CEO, Eric, is the king of spreadsheets, because when you want to start modeling things, I mean, your head will spin as he starts putting these things up. But he is so good at what he does. And we're lucky to have that. And you know, you talked about repurposing. I really think the staff, I mean, the committee itself, and it's a wonderful collection, but we're all volunteers.
Yes.
Okay. The staff did such a great job of repurposing, saying, okay, you know, we can't have this event, but let's repackage it and let's have, you know, a food bank drive or things like that, and got sponsors to line up. And so grateful for that. And
we created what we call Orange Bowl Cares as well, which we never had before. And all of a sudden we were like, hey, this really works. And now we're going to continue Orange Bowl Cares for a community service project for the years to come. So a lot of things, good things develop from it. It's sort of like making the lemonade a lemon.
Right.
And that's what we did.
Yeah. No. And I think, you know, you look back and you can take a great sense of pride in that we were fluid enough just to continually roll, because daily things changed, you know. Yes. I mean, and so you can't, you know, you're talking, we've got to project these things months out. You know, when you're putting on an event like that, you can't go, well, let's wait till the week before and we'll figure out whether it's fans or not. I mean, how do you sell tickets? You know, they did a great job of repackaging and giving deals on suites so that people could stay in their own little clusters knowing they were safe, which I did with my family, went to the game and had a great time.
And I'll tell you this, we did not know if there was going to be a game until that football was kicked.
Right.
And I'm not just saying that.
Oh.
I actually mean that, because we did not know whether or not a team could, that was sitting in a locker room, if those kids had gotten COVID or whatever it may be, that game was off.
Oh, sure.
So we really were on pins and needles as we were really moving up to game time.
Well, all the things we do, and it was, you know, so North Carolina makes it for the very first time.
Yep.
Okay. My son played at North Carolina just a few years ago, knows tons of people there. And I'm like, oh, this would be awesome. because there's so many events I could take them to, you know, at the team hotel and hospitality and all of a sudden it's like, no, they're coming down in a hermetically sealed bubble.
That's
they're going to stay in this little bubble. They're going to have one or two little practices over here and nobody gets in.
That's it. That's
so,
it.
So he didn't get to any of those events. So, you know, we'll see. I think we were talking just before it started, you know, Mac Brown has done such a great job. I think we'll see North Carolina again down here. That certainly won't be the, was their first, won't be their last. Though.
I agree. I mean, they could be ACC champions and everything, but this year, as you know, and your audience that may have some familiarity with college football, this year we'll have a semifinal game.
Right.
So it'd either be 1 versus 4 or 2 versus 3 at the Capital One Orange Bowl back in, it'll be what, December 31st this year?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. So at least we assume so as it's ever evolving.
That's right.
We're slightly more stable, but you know, we've got to get going there. So what's the greatest takeaway you have from being president? I know it was a unique year and everything else, but you look back on it and go, you know, this was the most sort of joyous moment, if there is a single moment.
I've had some time to think about that because that's a question that I've pondered, and I will definitely say it was the people that I had around me. There was never a no. It was always, how can I help? What can I do? And I reached out to so many people in our committee and said, I don't know how to do this. Can you lead us through this? And they come back with recommendations. And they did it with passion. They did it with love. And I think that it made our committee a lot tighter. And it realized that how many great leaders we have in our committee of some 300 people. So by far, it was certainly the way that the committee came together and did what they had to do to make it occur so that we would have a game on last year.
And I think that really typifies South Florida, because if you look at the history of South Florida, when there's disaster, when there's a Hurricane Andrew, yeah, a lot of bad comes out of people, but you really get for that time to see the best.
Absolutely.
I mean, people shine in the face of adversity, and that's where you see the leaders step up.
You know, we saw Surfside, and we saw how this community came together with Surfside a couple months ago. We see the Haiti earthquake and see what's happening there. We saw what happens in with Hurricane Ida and Louisiana. So as these disasters occur, whether they occur in our community or outside of our community, South Florida, I think, is there for the for our nation.
South Florida is a resilient area. Punchline to a lot of jokes occasionally with Florida,
yes.
but South Florida, I like to think, is different from Florida. And that's a whole different debate for some other times, because I'm like, well, we're South geographically,
yeah,
but we're kind of a different type of city than the rest of Florida.
We are completely very, very international. I mean, no one realizes it until you come here.
Right.
And we are an amazing international community.
All right, my friend. Well, it has been a pleasure. You've got Jeff Rubin, Workers' Comp. We didn't get into collections and other things you do and everything else, but a great local lawyer. Oh, let me ask you this. So you've got the scheme set up in Workers' Comp, okay? So when does somebody need to go talk to a lawyer? Because, again, in theory, okay, you should get hurt. Here's your benefits. All should be well. But
but
when do they need to seek a Workers' Comp lawyer?
Well, I mean, obviously, I'd like to see them early on so that I could guide them properly throughout the process and to make sure that the benefits that they receive in the beginning are correct, because, you know, it's catastrophic. You're not working, you're sitting at home, you're watching television, you're going to doctor's appointments. So I think the earlier on in the process you can see a lawyer, the better off it is. It doesn't mean that we have to go file claims and do things. We can just simply monitor it until such time that, you know, the insurance company doesn't do something they're supposed to do. So I think the earlier in the process, certainly the better.
All right. And I got one more question, just because this just popped into my mind.
Okay.
So the pandemic, everybody starts working from home.
Yep.
If you hurt yourself when you're working from home, can you file a workers' comp claim?
The answer is yes, because if all of a sudden you're now working from home, and this has actually happened recently, there was a case, and I forget what happened, but there was a case, I think it was actually an insurance company adjuster who was working from home. And this is a great case. So I think she tripped over her dog and she hurt herself.
Right.
And something tells me, and I hope I'm right on this, she did not receive benefits because the dog was not a part of her work environment. But let's say that she was sitting on her chair, which is a part of her work environment, and the chair broke and she fell to the ground.
Right.
and she hurt her back or something like that, then I think at that point workers' compensation
logically makes sense, right?
I mean, absolutely. But if she was then took a break, walked to the kitchen, tripped over her dog, then I can understand why that would not be a part of the workers' compensation claim, because it's outside of the realm of your normal tools of workers' compensation. I believe that's what happened in that case. I hope I'm right. If not, I made myself look like a fool.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Look, it just seems to me that if you're working from home, and again, you can show you're in the scope of that employment, then those benefits should apply whether you're in the office or at home. And we've seen such a dynamic shift that people are at home now.
That's correct. And that, and once, you know, workers' compensation will all evolve, because I think we're going to see a lot more workers working from home and doing things, or maybe working half from home and, you know, half from the office.
Well, I know for law firms and everything else, particularly big law firms, because that, you know, that's your biggest nut is the space that you've got. And everybody's going, hold on, everybody doesn't need an office. And in fields like law and other fields that you can track accountability on, once you're doing it from home, who cares? And yeah, you need maybe an office or conference room to meet in that you can share space. So I think the whole climate on commercial realty is going to change radically as a result of this.
100% agree. So we will evolve.
Slowly. I mean, much of us are cavemen. We evolve slowly, but we're getting there. I mean, you know, I just recently started walking upright. So it's all progress. But listen, Jeff, I appreciate it. Jeff Rubin, great lawyer, better guy. Okay. And I will tell you again, tremendous job as Orange Bowl president, but just overall really, really good guy. Knows his stuff, and clearly a guy that's easy to take off that list of killing all the lawyers with less Jeff Rubin. So appreciate it, Jeff. There you go. You're off the list. That's what we want. All right, Jeff. Appreciate it. We'll see you guys next week.